Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Relationships Rule. Today, I'm excited to be joined by Celeste Warren, an internationally recognized diversity, equity, and inclusion leader, and the author of The Truth About Equity, What It Really Is, What It Isn't, and Why Everyone Wins When We Get It Right. Celeste has her own consulting firm, Celeste Warren Consulting, and she's helping organizations of all sizes reshape how they think about equity. So we're going to take a look at breaking down what DEI really means for small business owners, solopreneurs, and entrepreneurs alike. We'll talk about what shifted in the cultural conversation, especially south of the border, because as you know, I'm in Canada, and why equity is still a relationship building tool, not just a corporate checkbox. So whether you've been unsure how DEI fits into your business or you're ready to lead with more clarity and intention, I hope that Celeste will bring some light to that fact. And welcome. Welcome to the show, Celeste.
Well, thank you, Janice. Thank you for the invitation. And I hope I bring some light, too.
Oh, you will. I'm no doubt. I know that you spent 30 years inside a global corporation. What inspired you to focus your next chapter on helping a broader range of organizations, including small business, lead with equity?
Well, I thought that with everything that I had learned, with different companies, it was close to four decades working across different companies. And I felt that I had a lot to offer. And learning what I learned over the course of those decades, and I wanted to be able to share the information with a broader group of people and really just enhance the platform that I was on and was given to me through God's grace, really, and just working through this. And it's a passion of mine as well. There were so many people who were just not feeling or understanding what was happening in this space. Mm-hmm. They were getting misinformation and disinformation. And so I felt just that I had to get out there and really talk about what was going on and really share with individuals and help them to really maneuver mm-hmm. and be successful in their efforts around diversity, equity, and inclusion in this complexing environment.
So when did you start your own consulting company?
I just started it in July of this year.
So as I would say, mazel tov. That's great.
Thank you.
Okay. So, but you wrote this book, and I know that you've written another book previously. Mm-hmm. So tell us the story between that one and then coming to this one, because it's kind of, I like it. You shared it with me.
That's right. The first book was called How to Be a Diversity and Inclusion Ambassador.
Right.
And
okay.
I wrote that book back in 2022. And the reason I wrote that book was basically in my travels, both internally within the organization and then externally at different conferences, inevitably there would always be one person, at least one person, that would walk up to me and say afterwards and say, you know, Celeste, I'm not a C-suite leader. I'm not a leader. I'm not a manager or a supervisor. I don't supervise people. I'm just me. I'm an individual contributor. And I just don't feel like I have a role in being able to change the environment and be an ambassador for diversity and inclusion like you talk about. And I just wanted to be able to answer that question for a variety of different people because every time I would get that question, I would sit there and I would talk with the individual and we would have a really good conversation. And I felt that more people needed to hear that message. And so I wrote that book in 2022. And I purposely did not talk about equity because at the time, even though there were a lot of people that were passionate around diversity and inclusion, they understood diversity, they understood inclusion. But equity was something that was just a little bit more complex, even for the folks that were very passionate about diversity and inclusion. And so I specifically did not talk about equity in the book. And I even talked about and said, I'm not going to focus the attention on equity. We're going to focus on diversity and inclusion. And so fast forward 3 years later, and during the campaign for the administration in the United States and all the different voting, all the different votes in different countries that were happening, and especially in 2024, there were a lot of opportunities for people to vote and elevate their voice. And what we found was there was this pendulum that swung to a more conservative voice, winning a lot of these elections. And so as a result of that, there was not just in the United States, although it's more pronounced in the United States, but there was just this misinformation around what diversity and inclusion was and what equity was. And I just felt like there had to be this same voice in this forest of misinformation. And I just felt compelled to write the book. And part of it was therapy as well for me, because I was in the chief diversity and inclusion officer role for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And we had made such progress, not just within the organization, but outside of the organization as well. And I just felt like we were just getting beat up.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the hard work that was done over the last year, all of those years, that it was just being just taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I almost took it personally for a large part of
it. Oh, I can understand that. Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, you're thinking about all the work that you had done and what was happening to it. And so I just felt like I had to write this book and really specifically this time talk about equity, because I had already talked about diversity
right.
and before.
Well, I do remember when DEI first sort of reared its head and I was like, what's that? And, you know, like, and I was, you know, I was working on my own. I wasn't in a company still when this all sort of came to light. But I remember a friend of mine in Minnesota was working for a woman who was a big advocate of DEI, and her whole business was around that. And so I sort of learned through her. And then so I understood, just like everybody else, I understood diversity, what that meant, and I understood inclusion. But tell me more. Tell me about equity. What does that mean? And then I want to come back to how all of the work that you did, you know, got the plug got pulled and everything started to fall apart. And I straighten us out on all of that, of how there's a, where do you start from now? Like, okay, but let's talk about equity first, because I want to know more, the truth about equity.
Yeah, the truth about equity is, and I like to use the analogy of the cartoon, the illustration that everyone has seen, where the first, it's three illustrations. The first illustration, you see three people, they're standing on one rock and there's a fence in front of them. And the person on the right, even with the one rock, still can't see over the fence. The person in the middle with the one rock can barely see over the fence. And the person on the left can clearly see over the fence with the one rock.
Okay.
In the middle, so that's equality, basically. That's basically you gave everyone one rock and you gave them all the same thing. And so everyone should be good. But obviously, everyone can't see over the fence. In the middle illustration, the person on the right has been given two additional rocks, so now they have three. They can see over the fence. The person in the middle has two rocks now, and they can clearly see over the fence. The person on the left had one rock before, has only one rock this time. And now, in my analogy, the rocks are acts of equity, things that you have to do so people can see over the fence, so they can have equal access to opportunities. And the fence is what I call those isms, racism, sexism, homophobia, all of those things that are more institutionalized and have been in society and institutions for a while. And it's going to take a longer term strategy to try to pull them apart. And so those acts of equity are needed in the meantime to be able to make sure that people have access to those opportunities. Now, what's happening in today's world is the person that was standing on one rock in both of those illustrations. Well, they're turning to their right and they're saying, well, why does that person have three rocks and why does that person have two rocks and I only have one? That's not fair. What, you know, what's happening? And they don't see the fence in front of them because they've always been able to see over the fence and see the mountains. And so they don't understand what that fence means to those persons to on his right. They don't know how behaviors manifest themselves in the workplace, in society, to those individuals. They don't fully understand it. And so what we have to do as practitioners and diversity and inclusion and equity ambassadors, we have to not just put the rocks in place so everyone has access to the opportunities. We have to tear the fence down and do the more strategic, long-term, harder work. Mm-hmm. And we have to go and have a conversation with the individual that's standing on one rock so they understand that the fence is there, what it looks like for his colleagues on the right, and then also to make them active allies so they get on the boat, get in the boat, grab an oar, and row with us and help us to get upstream. That's the work that needs to be done. And that's the difference between equality, where everyone was given the same thing, and equity, where you give people what they need to be able to succeed. Because ultimately, why everyone wins, we get to that third illustration where the rocks are gone, the fence is torn down, and everybody can see the mountains ahead. And even the person that was standing on one rock in the first two illustrations, they can see a broader view because the fence is gone and they didn't really even notice that the fence was up. It's like, wow, I can see the bottom of the mountain. I can see, you know, all of the other trees and everything else. So that's the analogy that I like to use when I try to explain the difference between what equity is, what it isn't. It's not preferential treatment, because that's what that individual was thinking. You have three rocks, you have two rocks, you're getting preferential treatment and I'm not. And that's not what it's about.
That's a great, great analogy. And you told it very, very well. I could see those pictures. It was great. And it's also then, okay, so the person that's always had the one rock, and that's their baggage that they have, their frame of reference, their upbringing, all of that stuff has put that into place where they think, hey, that's not fair, right? Mm-hmm. They don't know from anything other than what they know, right? So how much progress had been made before the world started to crumble?
I think a lot of progress had been made. And even before 2020 and the murder of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and all of the global protests mm-hmm. and that had taken place and the civil unrest, even before then, we were making a lot of headway. And people were, because, you know, we had Me Too before that, Me Too movement, and just all different types of things. There was xenophobia that was happening in the Asian culture, the things that were happening to persons with disabilities and the homophobia that was happening in the LGBTQ plus community. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of things that were happening that people were starting to elevate their voices and to say, you know what? We want to make sure that our voices are heard, that people understand what it is that we're going through, and that we put things in place that are going to help everybody have access to whatever they aspire to have or do. And I think that that body of work was just really starting to have a just this crescendo. And then, at least in the United States, with the administration, and all of the, actually, it started actually before the administration, because we saw that Roe v. Wade was overturned in 2023. The ruling against Harvard and mm-hmm. University of North Carolina around student admissions and not being able to use race as one of the criterias. So, you know, there were things that were already starting to happen. It didn't just happen in January, but this sort of pendulum swinging was even a little bit more quickly than probably what's happened historically. And so now where we find ourselves is a place where we have to think very strategically and be very purposeful and very clear around the work that we're doing in diversity, equity, and inclusion. Because diversity is simply differences in people. Diversity means differences. And in this case, differences in people, those you can see and those you can't see. And inclusion is where you surround them with a culture where they can really truly contribute to the organization or to the cause, and really make sure that all of those differences, different perspectives, skills, capabilities, identities, that all of those differences can be leveraged for a common or collective purpose.
So and, respected then also. As,
yes, yeah. Respected, empowered, yeah. And bringing their, not just their functional skills and capabilities, whether they're a marketer or communications person or engineer or scientist, but also they're bringing their cultural awareness and experiences as well to the table. Because this is where, you know, the importance of diversity, equity, inclusion from a people and culture standpoint, but also from a business standpoint as well. Because if you don't understand your customers, you don't understand the differences in the customers, you really can't be effective in whatever products or services that you are providing. And you have to understand, and that person on your team that is also a marketer, for example, they also could be bringing their cultural perspective as well to say, this is why our product or our service isn't reaching patients or customers in this particular area, in this demographic, because in my experience, this happens or that happens or et cetera. And it can enhance and create business innovation to allow businesses to reach markets that they otherwise may not have been able to reach.
Okay, well, that I don't know if I'm on the right track here, but it does make me think about how with advertising, how it feels contrived now sometimes when you see these ads. And you were in the pharmaceutical industry, and those are the ones that seem to me to be the worst, in the sense of there's an Asian person, there's a Black person, there African American person, excuse me, there's a white person, there's a Native American, like they're all in the same, you know. They make sure that everybody's there, but it seems so obvious that they're doing that.
Well,
no,
you know,
am I?
Yeah,
I don't mean to be.
It's a good conversation, Janice. I think from the standpoint of any business, and if you want to take the pharmaceutical industry, patients are so diverse around the world.
Of course.
And there are, and pharmaceutical organizations, they have to make sure that they're reaching patients and they're meeting the needs of patients, because we know that there are a lot of different health inequities that exist.
Yes, true.
There are a lot of challenges that exist. And what happens in different cultures around health and health outcomes is very, very different depending on that culture. You know, in many cultures, especially the Black and Brown culture, Latino and Hispanic and Black culture, they don't necessarily, when they're not feeling well, jump and go get in the car and go to a hospital or go to the doctor. They ask around their family, they ask around to their close friends, et cetera. And that's just a simple, you know, simple example. But the research that has to go into understanding the different patient segments and saying, how can we reach them, is really, really critical. It's really, really critical in order to be able to meet the needs. And the world is changing from a demographic standpoint. The growth of various different identities is really crucial, especially in this next generation and, you know, the Generation X as well, that is getting older. And and so we know that in Generation Y, I mean, they're in their 40s right now. You know, remember that just a few years ago, we thought of them as these young people. But that's not the case anymore. And so as we are learning about the different generations and the intersectionality of all of the identities, it becomes really, really critical. And so that's it. When you studied the world and you studied the different segments, you know how diverse the world is, and you have to make sure that that comes through. Otherwise, you lose a whole lot of different people.
Okay, that makes sense. All right. Let's talk about relationships for a moment. How does approaching DEI, from a relationship building mindset change the way a business owner might show up, whether with clients, business partners, or team members?
Yeah, we have to make sure that as leaders and as business people, that we are approaching people in a way where we're meeting them where they are. And so what I like to say is that the first engagement or interaction with them is one of discovery of that person, but also a little bit of self-discovery as well, because you're learning about someone who is different from you. They have different perspectives. They may identify differently than you do, different life experiences. And so the initial exchange should be one of discovery, both of them and of yourself as you grow and you learn. And then once you have that understanding of meeting them where they are and understanding about them, then it's basically, what do they need to succeed? What do they need? And what's getting in the way? What are the obstacles and the barriers that are getting in the way of them being able to achieve whatever it is that they need to, either from a leadership standpoint, as far as career aspirations, from a business standpoint, as far as what are their needs, from a customer standpoint. But you got to have that dialogue and that honest, and develop the trust too. Trust is so important, as you know, Janice, in relationships. Building that trust, and you don't do it by just performative things. You have to really dig deep and say, okay, what is my engagement? How do I learn about what your needs are? What's getting in the way of you being successful? And what do you need from me?
And what's getting in the way from myself?
Yes, yes.
To being able to help, right? And what's coming?
Self-discovery piece.
Right, you're right. And that's what's coming to mind now more is, because the world has changed so much, and you mentioned, you didn't say it right in this term. How did you say it? But it's the gender, how they identify is what you said.
Yeah.
And that's big these days. That's I didn't grow up with that, right? There wasn't that gender diversity, so to speak, openly anyway, you know. So there's a lot to learn, and a lot to learn about yourself around when, you know, learning about these things, right? It's funny. Yeah. I'm watching, it's the second time I've said to say this today. It's funny. I'm watching a show on Netflix that I didn't watch the first time around, and I don't know why, but I'm like immersed in it now, and I'm loving it. And that's Downton Abbey. And I don't know if it's anything you would have ever watched, but Downton Abbey is a show basically set in England. Are you familiar with the show?
Yes.
Like six seasons, and it's like takes place from 1914, I think, before the First World War, or around just before the First World War, to I don't know how far they go, but Second World War, I'm guessing, because I'm not quite there yet. But the things that change, and the English aristocracy, which is what the family, the upstairs downstairs kind of thing, the maids and servants, and then the aristocracy, and the matriarch, who is played by Maggie Smith, who's the most amazing actress, and I swear she has all the best lines in the whole show, because she's so funny and sarcastic, even though she's saying it in a serious way, because this is all she knows. And that's to do with what, you know, like I'm going overnight to London, but I won't have what I can't go if my, you know, if my lady's maid can't come with me, because God forbid I should have to undress myself, you know, like, I mean, that wasn't her words, but the mentality is so set in their way that it's hard to change. And the older they are, the harder the changes that are coming are. And that's a microcosm of what's really happening now that I'm watching on TV. And it's just really interesting what sets people off then and what sets people off now. We've come a long way, but We still have a long way to go for
Oh,
sure.
yes.
Yeah, so
That's
that's,
exactly the case. We have a long way to go.
yeah. And we see it in our children and grandchildren, for me, you know, that color, they don't see color the way we did when we were growing up. At least that's my experience. And just the whole society is.
Yeah, they see intersectionality. They see a lot of different things in one person, the younger generation. I have a son and daughter. My son is 22, my daughter's 24. And just listening to them talk and engaging in conversation with them, they don't. That's the difference, I think, between their generation and past generations, our generation. We, when I was growing up, it was black, white. My father was the first black teacher in his area and first black principal. We didn't necessarily talk about Latino, Hispanic, Asian, et cetera, et cetera. And it was just really sort of two-dimensional almost.
That's true.
And I the difference now is they see people in that intersectionality and that so many different dimensions and identities in one person.
That's
And
true.
I've learned that too throughout the years, as the chief diversity inclusion officer, learning about different cultures and different people and different communities and groups of people, that this generation, you're not one thing. You're not pigeonholed into this particular identity. And it's a beautiful thing because it just, you're so many different things and so many possibilities. It's just it's really a wonderful horizon that they're going to just be just going through in their journey.
Well, and I think that I just want to mention that, and you can mention about it, is the work that you're doing with your nonprofit, because your children are involved in that as well, correct? Called Destination STEM. And can you talk about that for a little bit? Because I think that's really important work too. And the
Oh, I
fact that
love
you're
it.
doing it with your kids is amazing.
Yes, we started Destination STEM. My daughter Christina, my son Stephen, we started it 4 years ago. And what it does, it's a nonprofit to get students of color and students in need interested in the STEM related fields, so science, technology, engineering, mathematics. And when you look in especially in the United States, you see that there's not strong representation of people of color in those fields. And so you have to go all the way back to elementary school, middle school, junior high school, high school, and get students of color interested in those STEM-related fields where they might have shied away from it
Well,
and
they
say,
didn't
well, I'm
have
not
the
smart
they
enough, or
didn't
I'm
they
not.
pro well, or they didn't have the role
The
models.
role models, exactly. Yep. They didn't have the role models, and they couldn't look up and say, well, there's somebody who looks like me with a white doctor's coat on, or they didn't see it, and so they didn't see the possibility. And so what we want to do is expose them to people who look like them that are in STEM related fields. We want to provide them with education programs and scholarships as well for high school seniors that are going to pursue STEM, and just get them aware of and understanding that that's a path that you could potentially take, that we hope that they would be interested in. So that's what we do, and we're really, really excited. We love the work that we do in that space. It's so fulfilling.
Oh, yes, I'm sure. That's amazing. If someone's listening is feeling overwhelmed by the weight of getting it all right, where do you recommend they start? I'm going to say your book, probably,
Yeah.
but.
The first, especially the first book, How to Be a Diversity and Inclusion Ambassador, because you don't want to be overwhelmed, but you want to start with just your self-discovery and really understanding what your strengths are and what your areas for development are in the area of diversity and inclusion. So once you sort of said, okay, well, what are my skills? What are my capabilities? What am I good at? What am I not good at? What do I know? What don't I know? You start with yourself first, and then you sort of then start looking around at your span of influence, your peers, your friends, and start having and engaging in conversations with them as well, especially colleagues who identify differently than you do. And so you've educated yourself, and then start to really open the dialogue and conversations with others. And you can do that, even in a workspace. You can say, hey, let's get together for lunch. Let's bring our lunch to a conference room or two and just have a conversation, or get, send out an article, link to an article or something, and say, hey, we're going to talk it. It's a little bit easier than the book club thing because you don't have to wade through a whole book. And just open up a dialogue with people that you're friends with,
I'm
and
laughing
while you're
because
over lunch.
everything's a sound bite now anyway, so
Yeah.
yeah.
That's it. And
So true.
and just do things where you look around you in your organization or your firm or wherever you're at, your school, and start noticing things and saying, okay, well, why is this happening? Or this really isn't really inclusive, or this happened at this meeting, or this happened in this setting. And start once you start you've educated yourself and you start observing things, then you start doing things, and it doesn't have to be these huge monumental pounding your fist on the table things. It can just be little things where, you're in a meeting and someone gets marginalized or they get talked over or their idea isn't paid attention to. You can just say, hey, Janice, that was a really good idea that you brought up a few minutes ago. Can you talk a little bit about that? I'm kind of curious about it. And, getting people to just sort of you've sent a message and you've also created a learning moment in that moment that you've done
Oh, I
that. It
can hear
doesn't
you.
take a lot.
No, but it's ingrained in you, and that's what's so wonderful. I can hear it with everything that you say. And for those of us who don't have it, immediately come off our lips, there is some first awareness, like you said, and discovery, and then intention needed to improve the situation. I get that. That's great. So last question about this. In your experience, what's the biggest reward that comes when a business owner leads with inclusion and equity at the heart of what they do?
Oh gosh, it's I call it the employee ripple effect. And I've seen it so many, many times, and it's so beautiful where there, and I'll give you an example. There's a young lady, she was a scientist in the lab. So she's just sitting there, she's at her desk every day with her beakers and her vials and all that. And that's what she did. An introvert as well, but so innovative in how she thought about what she does while she's sitting at that bench. And so I had the opportunity to meet her at one of the events, and we started talking, and she had all of these really great ideas. And she said, I was thinking about this and I was thinking about that. And, in patients like that look like this, or the patients this, I've, they're experiencing these different things. And I said, well, have you talked to your manager about it? And she's like, oh no, she doesn't want to hear about it. They don't want to hear about it. They would just tell me to go back to my job and just do what I'm supposed to do. And I said, you know what? I want you to talk to somebody else that would be very interested in what you have to say. And so I brought her into a discussion, just lunch, really informal, with someone who was over another part of an organization deals with patient and understanding patients. And they had the conversation, and all of a sudden, the idea just started blooming, and she took it to another person and took it to another person. And it became not just a project, but an assignment. And she got a new job and a new title. And she's now working on this initiative that is saving the lives of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people over the course of just a couple of years. And, she went from this quiet person to this wonderful, wonderful leader and an innovative person who's saving lives. And it started with inclusive leadership. It started with someone paying attention to her, listening to her, empowering her, giving her the tools and the resources she needed to sort of see this to fruition, and then guiding her. And that's what, you know, connecting her with this person, that's what they did. And it just grew. She just grew. And you to sit there and watch her over the course of these couple of years, it was just phenomenal. And so it wasn't just something that was good for her, but it ended up being great for hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah. As she grew as a person, gained confidence, as people trusted her, and she began to blossom. That's really exciting. Yeah.
Yes.
She'll be writing a book someday.
Yes, he will.
Oh, this has been so wonderful. I really hear the passion in your voice about the work that you do. I really do. And I encourage my audience to check out your book. Where can they find the truth about equity?
They can find it on Amazon.com.
Okay.
And it's also in bookstores across the globe.
Oh, that's
and
exciting.
Also, yeah. And also on my website, www.crwdiversity.com. The CRW is my initials, Celeste
right.
Renee Warren.
Okay.
CRWdiversity.com. And there's a link to the book there as well.
I will put all that in the show notes so people can check it out. And I want to give a huge thanks to you, Celeste, for bringing clarity and calm to a topic that can feel complicated and reminding us that equity at its core is about how we show up for each other. It really is, I know. So I do highly recommend Celeste's book, and I encourage you to go check out her work. And always remember, to my audience, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with someone else who values building relationships that matter. And remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener, because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people. So I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.